It's heartbreaking to see a tree that you planted 20 years ago die. But maybe there's something you can do. It's Talk of Iowa for Iowa Public Radio. Sitting in for Charity Nebbe, I'm Sarah Bowden. While 2013 brought plenty of rain, maybe too much, the effects of last year's drought can still be seen across Iowa's landscape. Are your red maples or crabapple trees looking a little worse for wear? Horticulturalist Jeff Isles from Iowa State University and Richard Duran from ISU are here. They'll talk about how you know if your trees are sick and what you can do to make them better. Join us after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Sitting in for Charity Nebbe, I'm Sarah Bowden. It's Horticulture Day today. ISU Extension Horticulturist Richard Duran will be here in a few minutes to answer your questions. But first, Jeff Isles, the Horticulture Chair at Iowa State University, is here. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning.
Hey, so today you and I are going to talk about trees and the lasting effects on trees due to last year's drought and the fact that this spring was Iowa's wettest spring on record. So, Jeff, what are the lasting effects of drought on trees?
Now, Sarah, I thought you had that answer already for us.
Oh, come on, Jeff.
Well, that's the million-dollar question, and if trees and shrubs could only talk, then we'd have a much better idea. But one thing our listeners, I'm sure, after listening to this program for many, many years, know that a lot of these stresses tend to accumulate, and it's hard to know which one has brought down your tree or shrub. So let's go back to last summer, one of the driest and hottest summers on record, and we know that a lot of plants went into winter in a weakened state. That was just a fact of life. And the great question was, well, how were they going to come out of winter? What would their state be come March and April? And then you have to factor in what might have happened during the winter months. We worry about low temperatures. We worry about fluctuating temperatures. And as our listeners all know, when you live in the upper Midwest, we are subject to wild swings in temperature, and we certainly had some of that. We had some weird events back in the fall and similar events in late winter, early spring. And I find that fluctuations in temperature that occur at either end of the season, that is late fall and very late winter, early spring, are more damaging than midwinter lows.
And why is that?
Well, when you think about it, trees and shrubs can't come inside during the winter. They have to stay in place.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get ready for winter based on a couple of cues, a shortening day length and gradually cooling or warming temperatures. And when you throw them a curveball, when they're trying to get ready for winter and you warm up and then you get cold in a hurry, that can be very damaging to a plant. And likewise, at the other end of the season, when you're losing your acclimation and it's getting warmer and then all of a sudden you go into a cold trough, that can be also very damaging. So it's all about the plant, the time of the year and what it's doing at that particular time of the year. In midwinter, they've reached their midwinter highest acclimation period, and they're ready for just about anything. But at either end of the season, it seems like they're more vulnerable.
So how do you know if your tree's sick?
Well, one thing I look at, and in fact, I watch the landscape, and those trees that have smaller leaves than normal look very thin in the canopy. That is, you can see right through them. Sometimes early fall color is also another sign that something is wrong, or a spectacular floral display in the spring is sometimes a cue that something has gone horribly wrong.
Now, that seems counterintuitive to me.
Yeah, it does. But when you think back, if you've ever seen a tree that just shows some of the best fall color it's ever had, or maybe produces a lot of seed, many times that's kind of a sign that it's the last hurrah for that plant. And, you know, trees produce a lot of seed for other reasons, too. But these weird, spectacular events, exceptional fall color, exceptional seed production, or exceptional flower production right before the plant dies is not all that unusual. So I don't want listeners to think, well, all plants that are performing well are about to die. But there is something to be said for that last hurrah before the lights go out. But this time of the year, I'd be looking for a plant that has a very thin canopy or very, very small leaves, and that would indicate that the plant is not very healthy. It's not very thrifty. Something has gone wrong. And it's way too easy to blame all of this on drought or fluctuating temperatures or something recent. As I mentioned early on, these stresses tend to accumulate, and it could be something else that is weighing on the plant. It could be something below ground that we can't see. There's a lot of plants that will develop roots that actually strangle their own trunks, which is what sounds diabolical, but it sometimes happens. So it's not easy to always come up with a good answer as to why trees and shrubs decline and eventually fail. But we can make a pretty good guess. That's why when Richard and I try to answer these questions via phone, we often ask for pictures. And in the new digital age, we see many more of those. And so a picture of the tree crown, a picture of how the tree meets the ground, that is how the trunk goes into the ground, are often very very helpful in making the correct diagnosis.
So we have an email from Mark and Tony in Des Moines. We have a 65-year-old plus Norwegian spruce that has one branch with two splits that has lost most of its needles this spring. Could this be due to ice and snow cover from the big storm last December? But it still has us worried. What can they do?
Yeah, Norway spruce is a pretty tough character. They have a few disease problems, but by and large, they live long lives. But right, we had that heavy wet snow back last December, and splits are pretty common on conifers. So a mechanical damage of some kind would be expected. And if that branch has a lot of brown needles on it or is dead, then simply removing that branch is the simple solution. That seems plausible to me.
And what can others do if they're seeing these signs?
Well, and again, this is where the detective work gets muddied, because we live in a state where we have lots of conifers, but we have a lot of conifer problems. So when I talk about conifers...
You're about to answer that. What is a conifer?
Well, when I talk about conifers, we're talking evergreens,
okay.
the rank and file, white pine, Colorado blue spruce, things like that. White fir. And we have a lot of very good conifers that we use, but a lot of them we use have some significant disease problems.
Mm-hmm.
I just mentioned Colorado spruce.
Mm-hmm.
Great plant, but it has several, two or three significant disease problems that tend to wear on it as it gets older. And therefore, when we're trying to diagnose problems on conifers, we like to see samples, but we're back to pictures again. And how are those symptoms being expressed on the tree itself?
So how do you know if it's too late to save your favorite tree?
Well, saving is one of those words we like to use, but sometimes a plant isn't worth saving. Let me back up. Some of these disease problems are bad. There's no way around that, but they gradually wear the tree down. So it's not like the plant is going to contract a fungal disease and then die in a matter of weeks, even years. Sometimes it takes longer. If you wanted to arrest a fungal disease on a conifer, then there are some fungicide treatments you could use, but those fungicide treatments have to be timed very specifically. They can't just be thrown on the tree willy-nilly. They have to be applied when they'll do the most good. And of course, if you have a large evergreen, a large conifer, just applying these products to the tree becomes problematic, because if you've got a 30 or 40 foot Colorado spruce, most homeowners don't have the equipment to get good coverage. And so then we rely on the qualified arborist to come out and give us a hand.
So we have Bill on the line. He has a question about oak trees. Hi, Bill. What's your question? Hey, Bill? Bill?
Yes.
Hi. You have a question about oak trees.
Yes, I do. I've got about 100 oak trees that are anywhere from 10 to 30 years old. And I planted all these. And normally, in the wintertime, I do all the pruning and trimming when it's cold. But this year, they got away from me, and I've got a lot of little, and they seem like there's more this year than ever, water shoots or little growth on the sides of the trunks of the tree, which, I like to trim off. Am I too late to try to do that? A lot of times I just pull them off. They're, real tender. But some of them are as large as a lead pencil right now.
Yeah. Bill, what kind of oak are these?
Oh, I've got all of the white oak and the red oak families, like, white oak, bur oak, shingle oak.
Yeah.
And I have some black oak, chested oak, and
wow.
Thin oaks, scarlet oaks, English oak, chinkapins.
Do you just do this for a hobby, or do you have?
Yes, I just really love oak trees, and I'm trying to get plant everything that is, that will grow in our part of the country here.
Yeah, that's impressive. You ought to hook up with a guy named Guy Sternberg. Guy is one of the foremost oak experts in the country. He's over in Illinois. But if you Google the name Guy Sternberg, you mm-hmm. and he, you guys are kindred spirits. So you'd enjoy talking to each other.
There's a fellow up in Kalamazoo, Michigan that has Oaks Farm.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And some of the seedlings I have bought from him, okay. And I talk to him quite often. He's very helpful.
Well, you oak guys are, you're a different breed, that's for sure.
You know, especially when you get to be my age and planting oak trees, you're pretty optimistic.
there you go. Well, you sound about 29 to me, but. So, Bill,
about four times that.
All right. Well, Bill, the reason we don't like to prune oak in the summer is because of the fungal disease oak wilt. And we like to kind of put the pruning shears away during the growing season. In fact, when the tree is growing, we tend to leave it alone. I'm not sure removing sprouts along the trunk will get you into trouble. But, man, if I toe the company line, we like to do all of our pruning during the dormant season on oaks, just to avoid any potential breach in the tree's defenses that might allow oak wilt to infiltrate.
This year, for some reason, there's just more of those on the trees than have ever been before.
Yeah, I've noticed that too, and it could be because of it could be stress from last year. It could also be the excellent growing conditions we've had this spring. So I know it looks unsightly, but just for the record, I'm going to say you probably should wait until the dormant season. Now, I violate the record all the time in my own yard because if I screw up, then it's my yard. When it's your yard, I've got to be more careful. So.
Thanks for your call, Bill. So, Jeff, I'm wondering, what's the best time to plant?
I like to plant when the temperature's above 20 degrees and I don't have to wear too many clothes. That's kind of a flip answer. You know, you can plant almost any time of the year. With container-grown stock, you can the calendar's wide open. Most will say that you're best planting, you know, in the spring and in the fall, but I've had good luck in the summer. It's more about how to plant, and it's more about what you do after planting that I think is more critically important. So I'm kind of dancing around your question. Obviously, I don't want to be planting as we go into winter, so I tend to call a halt to planting in October. But it's more about what you do than when you do it.
Awesome. Well, we're talking about trees right now, but of course, you're welcome to ask questions about any of the plants in your life. Jeff Iles, horticulture chair at Iowa State University, is here. ISU Extension horticulturalist Richard Giron will join the conversation when we come back. We have open lines at 866-780-9100. Also, you can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be right back. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Sitting in for Charity Nebbe, I'm Sarah Bowden. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me is Jeff Iles from the Horticulture Chair at Iowa State University. And joining the conversation is ISU Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. Hi, Richard.
Good morning.
Good morning. So Jeff and Richard are here to answer questions about the plants and trees in your life. If you have a question, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. So Richard, Jeff, before we get to calls, and we have a lot, I had a question about tree diversity. When planting a tree, what sorts of, and considering diversity and disease, what sorts of factors should you consider, and what's a good tree to plant?
Well, that's a key word that we use today, Sarah, about what you should use, and diversity is extremely important. Obviously, if you have a lot of something in your neighborhood, then you probably should be using something else. We've planted an awful lot of autumn blaze maple around the state of Iowa, and there's nothing wrong with that tree, but we do get nervous when it starts to line every residential street in your town. So I guess I would take stock of what's out there. And I would try to switch things up. If I'm looking for a yard tree, then I'd look at my neighborhood and see what is prevalent, And I would choose from one of 100 other things that could be used. So diversity is important, and it's important because of insect and disease things that might show up in our state. We're waiting for emerald ash borer to begin spreading, and, of course, that's why we don't use ash anymore. But just look at the number of ash we have in our landscapes, and we're kind of set up for problems now. So that's why we use the D word or think about it when we're adding trees and shrubs to the landscape.
So it's a cautionary tale, I guess you could say?
Well, we've been taught that tale a number of times.
Yes.
When you think back to American elm and Dutch elm disease and now the emerald ash borer. So we planted a lot of American elm up and down our streets back in the 20s and 30s, and we paid for it, and now we might pay for it again with all the green and white ash that line our streets. So it is a cautionary tale, and hopefully we'll learn our lesson this time.
Let's get to the phones. Dara in Iowa City, you have a question?
Yes, I have a bald cypress tree that I've had in a pot for about 3 years, and it seems like the pot is not able to water demand in the summer anymore, and I'm kind of shocked that the tree is still alive, frankly. And I'm ready to transplant that into the ground and wondering if there's anything in particular that I should do to make sure that transplant goes well.
Right. So, Darren, this thing has been in its container for about 3 years, did you say?
Yeah.
Okay. My biggest concern then would be that undoubtedly you've got a root system that's spiraling, that's wrapped around itself, that's probably pretty well developed inside that pot. And so your job now is to kind of be rough with that root system. You don't want to just throw it in the ground as is. So have you knocked it out of its pot to see the roots?
From what I can see of the roots in the pot, it definitely has sort of a spiraling shape to it already.
Right. So this might sound a bit counterintuitive, but you're going to need to rough that root system up. And by that, I mean you'll need to disrupt that circling pattern. And you might take a knife, you might take pruners, you could even take a saw. There's a new technique called the box cutting technique, where you take a saw and you sever the roots right at the perimeter of the root mass. So you cut down the side of that root mass, maybe an inch in, and the idea is to break up those spiraling roots, to sever the roots and to create some new root tips that will eventually grow out instead of growing around in circles. And it looks bad. It looks like you're doing damage, but it's been shown to be very, very beneficial. I also will go to the extra work of just digging my fingers into the root mass and trying to separate them out a little bit. The idea is you want the roots to go out, to grow into the surrounding backfill, and not to simply remain kind of going around in a circle. So does that make sense?
Absolutely. Should I expect kind of a lag time for the tree to look kind of unhealthy while it's redeveloping a root system in the ground?
Well, and this goes back to what we talked about right before the break about planting. You know, when the tree is first put in the ground, tree or shrub is first put in the ground, water management is extremely important. So, you might see some reduction in growth next year because of this necessary process and the necessary operation. But you can mitigate or reduce the effects of transplant shock with proper water management. Now, keep in mind, you've got a really confined root system there. And that plant might have the tendency to dry out quickly because the roots are so confined. And when those roots eventually begin to grow out into the backfill and into the site soil, then it's going to be established, if you will. But until it becomes established, what you do with the hose is extremely important. So you might have to water rather frequently, especially now that we're coming into the hot, dry summer months. And so what you do with a garden hose is extremely important, and that'll help eliminate any stress.
Thanks for your call, Darren. We have an email from Josh who has a question about dwarf citrus trees. Josh writes, I've been trying to grow for the past few years. Two of them were exposed to a little too much cold and the top of the tree had died. These are grafted trees and the two that died have sprouted back up quite a few healthy rootstock. What is likely to come up of the true trees that died and grew back? Will they be citrus or something else?
Well, they're going to be some type of citrus, but they may not be dwarf or miniature. They may not be that specific variety. So oftentimes where they're grafted, you can see a little notch in the stem. And so if the shoots are coming from above that, it should be the same tree. From below that, it's different. It's a rootstock, and that may not be a good fruiting tree. So depending on where it comes from, it may not be what you want.
All right. Dave in Norwalk has a question about sycamores. Hey, Dave.
Hi, you guys. Let me pull over while I'm doing this. I've got two big, beautiful sycamores in my front yard. Last year, for the first time, when the kind of drought hit, my lawn dried up and the sycamores started dropping leaves. Again this year, the sycamores started dropping leaves about a week and a half ago. And I was wondering if they're in danger. They might be stressed from last year because they sure got a lot of water this year. And I've been watering them. And I'll kind of take my answer off the air. And thank you very much.
I'll take that just because where I grew up, we had three or four sycamores. And what you're seeing there is anthracnose. It's a common fungal disease. And when you have cool weather in the spring, you have conditions that are ideal for anthracnose. We can see that on also ash, maple, and oak. The good thing is it's a temporary thing. It's not going to kill the trees. You can get very heavy leaf drop when you have a wet spring. I have seen sycamore trees in late June that were almost totally bare. But they continue to leaf out. And I would say probably by mid-July, they should look basically normal. So it's basically anthracnose. It's a common fungal disease. Basically, ignore it for the most part. You may have to go out there and rake some leaves in June, but that's rather odd. But the tree itself is fine.
Wonderful. Thank you for your question. We have a couple open lines. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. Now we're going to Sharon in Johnston. Sharon, what's your question?
Good morning. I recently bought this beautiful orchid, and I've never had one before. And the instructions that came with it said once a week, water it with 1/4 cup of water or 3 ice cubes. And I'm wondering, what do I do for long-term care? For example, when the blossoms are finished blooming, and do I ever have to repot it? And what do I repot it with? Do I ever have to use fertilizer?
Well, I would basically fertilize periodically, basically in the spring and summer for the most part. As far as watering, I don't think I'd use the ice cubes, but I would water well when you do so, and some water should flow out the bottom of the pot or container, and that excess water should be discarded. Give the plant plenty of bright light, but not direct sun. When the plant is done blooming, cut off the flower stalk. As far as repotting, it shouldn't be that frequent. I would say maybe every 2 or 3 years at most. And you can actually buy potting mixes specifically for orchids. Basically, it's usually composed of like bark chips or wood chips. But just good, consistent care is what they like.
Awesome. Thank you, Sharon. Next, we're going to Rock in Mount Vernon. What's your question?
Hi. We just recently purchased a historic home, and the previous owners had planted some ornamental cedar, quote-unquote, bushes right next to the porch, and now they're about 25 feet tall. And I'm wondering how to kill it, cut it down, and kill the roots so that they don't continue to do damage to the front porch and move it into the foundation.
Rock, are these historic cedars?
I don't know. I might have to check with the National Historic District.
Yeah, you got to be careful. So when you say cedar, are they kind of a soft-needled?
Soft-needled. It's kind of a continuous vegetation from the bottom to the top, a narrow tapered.
Yeah. Well, you know, it sounds like an arborvitae. Those will probably not come back if you cut them back to the ground. So if you have a chainsaw or if you're good with a handsaw, I would think that if you just cut them back to the ground below the foliage, chances of them resprouting are pretty slim. You're going to have a stump there, so you might you'll either have to cope with that or live with it or have that pulled out. But I don't think they're going to resprout like a silver maplewood or some other deciduous tree.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Rock. Coming up next is Judy in Creston. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
What's your question?
My question is, over 20 years ago, we purchased a...
I'm sorry, Judy. Can you repeat your question? I'm sorry about that. You have crab apple tree? I'm sorry. I messed up quickly. Can you just start your question again?
Yes. 20 years ago plus, we purchased a crab apple tree and planted it. It did very, very well. It's quite a large tree. But within the last probably 2 or 3 years, it has crabapple leaves and crabapples, and it has regular apples and regular leaves. And so when it blooms, the crabapple blossoms are one color and the apple blossoms are another. This year, it is loaded with crabapples and loaded with regular apples. Hmm. What's going on?
That's a real collector's item there, Judy. You're to be congratulated. So do you remember what selection you purchased? Do you remember what it was called?
I'm sorry, I don't.
Okay. Well, let me throw a few things at you. As you probably know, a lot of these ornamental trees are grafted plants. In fact, a few minutes ago, Richard was talking about some grafted citrus trees.
Yes.
And so perhaps you have a sprout that came from the rootstock, which could be just an old apple tree.
Okay.
And perhaps that sucker turned into a major branch, and that would explain the different flower colors, and that might explain the different sizes in fruit. That's about the tree might have been top grafted. There are some cultivars that are grafted closer to the tree canopy, that is up in the tree canopy. And again, the same thing might have occurred. You might have gotten some growth from below the desirable tree that you purchased that is of not the same genetics. So I'm not sure I'm explaining that the best way, but remember, when you're grafting plants together, you really have two plants in one. And if growth comes from the rootstock, which is used simply to encourage the plant to grow faster, typically what comes from the rootstock, any vegetative part of the plant that comes from the rootstock would not be desirable from an ornamental standpoint, but it's there simply to lend vigor to the plant. So if growth came from one of those areas, then that could explain the different flower colors and different fruit sizes. Obviously, it's not desirable unless you like that appearance. So I guess you could trim back those parts of the tree that are showing the larger fruit and try to preserve what you originally purchased. That would be my take on it. Now, if you've let this go for a while, then that might be a bigger job than what I'm making it out to be. And it might
be got much larger than we ever anticipated.
Well, that my guess is that something has gone rogue. That you've got a sprout that started out as a very small sprout that came from the rootstock or below the graft union that has now become dominant.
Okay.
And so pruning that back to its point of origin would be the first thing to do. However, it might leave a pretty big hole in your tree.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Judy, for your call. Up next is Nancy, who's having some issues with their double mock orange. Nancy?
Yes, that's true. We got it about 10 years ago, and in a former house we lived, it was just gorgeous, covered with blossoms, smelled nice. But this never has looked good, ever, and it gets tall instead of rounded, and all the leaves look terrible. They have little brown around them, and most years it only blooms one or two blooms, so I had my husband cut it way down to the ground last year. And, of course, it just was happy about that. It came up big and glorious as ever and ugly as ever. And it had quite a few blossoms on it, but they all look terrible. And so I'm wondering, should we just get that thing out of there and give up hope for it ever to being a nice little double mock orange bush?
That would be my vote, yes. Just start over.
Yeah, why in the world did that happen? I wondered when he was talking about the arborvitae. Now, we have one quite close to this other bush. And I'm wondering if that sapped up all the good nutrients in the ground or something.
No. I'm not sure why it's doing what it's doing, but it's obviously not performing like you wish. And so I would pull the plug. I would get rid of it and plant another one.
I also wanted to tell you about my high bush cranberry. It was a gorgeous tree bush, turned into a tree practically 6 or 7 feet tall last year. Big leaves, huge blossoms as big as my hand. And lo and behold, this spring, it was dead.
Yeah, we've had a couple of reports of all kinds of plants doing that, and it really makes no sense. Highbush cranberry is a tough character, and what might have caused it. But you've just brought up that point again of heavy flowers and a plant that looked spectacular, then it just dies. And
that was the word for it, spectacular. Now, however, it had sewn up some other little plants, and those are still green and okay. So I left those thinking maybe they would take over from the one we had to cut out. Is that true or not true?
Well, they probably came from the seeds, and they're probably not going to be as desirable as your parent plant there. So I don't know. Sounds like you've got some trips to the garden center in your future, Nancy.
Well, those things that came up, they've been up there for 2 or 3 years. I just hadn't cut them out, and I'm glad I didn't. Yeah. They look very healthy, and they're 4 feet tall, four or five feet tall.
There you go. Try it.
Yeah, I thought, what can I lose?
Yeah, right. And they're free.
And they're free. That's another good point. Okay, well, that was a sad story about the high bush cranberry, I can tell you that.
Yeah, that is, and it's hard to say what might have brought it down. Again, we had some strange weather fluctuating temperatures, and that might be partly to blame, but who knows.
Well, thank you for your call, Nancy. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to answer more of your questions. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send us an email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. Sitting in for Charity Nebbe, I'm Sarah Bowden. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me is Jeff Isles and Richard Giron from Iowa State University and Iowa State University Extension. Let's just get to the phones. We have Shirley in Cascade. Hey, Shirley, what's up?
Butternut trees, somebody gave me five of them. A forestry near here gave me five of them. In the early 90s, because they were all dying of canker. And mine have been thriving until last year, and I just noticed that two of them have dead limbs on them. Should I cut those two and hope to save the other three? Or is the jig up and they all have it, and you just don't see it yet?
What? Shirley, I haven't heard anybody say the jig is up in a long time. That's great. Thanks for calling. boy, you got them all to live, so you're to be congratulated for that.
But what should I do? There was a problem with oaks sometime back, and cutting off the dead parts works for that.
Yeah.
But the butternut canker pretty much wiped out the butternuts in the state.
Yep, mm-hmm. Yep. And so all you can do is radical surgery, remove limbs as they die, hope for the best. I don't know of any fungicide treatments that are effective. It is a huge problem. It's a very sad story because...
I remember my father years and years and years. That was one of the few things I even remember about him, that he could smell a butternut tree in the woods.
Yep. So I don't have any magic.
And what are you telling people to do about their ashes for the same reason, for the same thing? That emerald ash borer. My ashes are doing
technical
fine.
Difficulties. It should be. We should be back on air in a little bit. Just stay with us. Talk of Iowa on Iowa Public Radio. We are talking. We're doing horticulture today. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. Or email us at iowapublicradio.org. Something interesting I find about trees. Hello?
Hey, Sarah?
Yeah?
Something interesting I find about trees.
Shirley, hang in there.
Yeah.
Is that...
Okay.
Shirley, let me jump in here. You brought up a really good question about what to do with ash. I know this is a question a lot of our listeners, a lot of Iowans are wrestling with. We've already talked about the emerald ash borer. It's up in Allamakee County. It's moving very slowly. But
something interesting I find about trees is that they last a
hang
really
in there,
long
hang in there,
time.
Okay.
No one can hear me.
Okay, Shirley. So let me try to get my train of thought here.
Something interesting.
My point is that the ones that I got are fairly small and be easy. I could maybe even take them down myself.
Sure.
But if I wait 10 years... No.
Well, that's the question people are wrestling with. Who knows when the
can hear me.
Who knows when the emerald ash borer is going to show up? It might be 10 years from now. It might be 20 years. It could be a long time. So a lot of folks are deciding to take the trees down just so they don't have to wrestle with them 10 years from now. But if these are healthy-looking trees, we just don't know when the borer is going to show up. So I don't know. It's an individual decision.
If anyone can hear me, we are having technical difficulties in Iowa City. So, Richard and Jeff, why don't you just talk about trees and what's going on in your gardens, and I'll be with you.
Hey, Shirley, you still there?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're having a rainstorm here too, but it's not crashing. It's just raining.
Let's just blame it on the butternuts. You know, they're kind of. So if I were you, you know, there's so many great trees to plant today. If these are still young, I'd be tempted to remove and replant with a variety of things. And boy, the sky's the limit as to what you could use. But we know the emerald ash borer isn't going away, and that it really likes white and green ash. And if that's what you have, then maybe, maybe as you say, the jig is up and we need to plan for the future.
Yeah, well, I think I'll take the small one down. I already planted a red maple, one of those maples, those colorful maples.
Sure.
Because if there's space between them, you might as well get it started. Then you'll have some sort of tree, even if they do go down.
And I'd put a plug in for white oak. I know it's a big old tree and it grows slowly, but future generations will laud your name if you get the white oak to go. I think it's just one of our best trees. But that's your
The
point.
Oaks are so beautiful, all of them. Thanks so much.
All right,
Shirley.
Thank you. So let's. I think we're freelancing this one. So is Sarah back with us? I guess not. So Richard, what have the calls been for you this past week? What's been coming in the most?
I would say there's nothing specific. We are starting to see leaf drop on various trees. For example, on anthracnose, on sycamores, we're seeing leaf drop on crab apples. That's basically apple scab. That's very common. Neither of those are going to kill the tree, but you may see a lot of leaf drop. And as far as the crab apples, when you buy a crab apple, make sure it is apple scab resistant. Mm-hmm. An off color, not that dark green, but kind of maybe a bluish green or grayish green. You can just tell it's a little bit dry. And it can survive in that condition for a short time. And then if it stays dry, then it turns brown. It actually goes dormant. So that's kind of a natural defense mechanism when it's dry. But usually if it's just a short period, it turns kind of a bluish green, grayish green. And as soon as it rains, it greens right back up.
Yeah. Time for true confessions, I guess. But my lawn never looked worse than it did last fall. My lawn was terrible, and now it looks really good. So it's funny what rain will do.
Hi, Richard. Hi, Jeff.
We were
having some technical difficulties in Iowa City, but I'm back, and it's going to be okay.
we were just gabbing.
Yeah. Well, I heard a little bit. It sounds like a good conversation, but let's get to some emails. This is from Eddie. I planted a red bud tree last fall, Rising Sun variety. This spring it bloomed and leaves seemed perfectly healthy, and after 2 or 3 weeks the leaves wilted and now they've all dropped. I wonder why and if the tree can be saved. So what can Eddie do?
Boy, that doesn't sound good. It sounds like the tree actually did die. They planted that last year. Is that correct?
He said last fall.
Last fall. Hmm. For whatever reason, apparently that tree did not get reestablished. It didn't make it. That does happen on occasion when you plant a tree. Normally, if you plant a healthy tree, give it good care, there's a very good chance it will survive. But sometimes, despite your best efforts, sometimes they don't. And maybe the winter was a part of that. I don't know. But apparently it didn't make it, unfortunately.
For that reason, Eddie, I'm a big fan of planting redbud in the spring. It is a tree that has a reputation for being a little bit hard to establish, and so I'd rather put it in the spring rather than fall.
Fred writes with a question about a 20-foot-tall white oak. What is the latest guidance to help the tree deal with weather conditions?
20-foot-tall white oak, well, it sounds like it's firmly established in the landscape. That's a good news. With an oak tree, especially white oak, I try to get out of its way. That is, white oaks are not big fans of disturbance. And so I'm going to limit turf grass competition under its canopy. So mulching, 2 to 3 inches of mulch underneath the canopy is a good thing to do. Watering during extremely dry periods. But other than that, it's on its way, and it's it sounds like it's firmly established in the landscape. There isn't a whole lot that needs to be done with oaks, but especially white oak. But just, try not to wound the trunk. That's why the buffer zone of mulch under the canopy is a good idea.
Fred also has a question about apple trees. What is the absolute minimum frequency of spraying apple trees to assure worm-free fruit? Say that three times fast.
Yeah. Basically, the important time there is the time period from blossom drop until right before harvest. And so that may be most of May, June, July, August. You may have to spray every 10 to 14 days, so it's going to be multiple applications.
Okay. And now we have a question from Lauren. We have a nice rhubarb patch and love the sauce and different things you can make with the stems. My wife said that you cannot pick rhubarb after July 4th. Is this true?
Well, you shouldn't harvest it after mid-June in Iowa. And the reason for that is the stalks are still edible. But when you harvest in the spring, that does gradually weaken the plant. And so you want to give the plant sufficient time to recover as far as vigor so it's productive again next year. So typically we stop harvesting in mid-June or so.
Okay. So let's go to another email question. I have an ash tree, probably 30 feet tall. This is from Kathy. Previous owners built a bed around the tree that is about 10 inches high and 6.5 feet across. We see a lot of tree roots at the top of the soil that circle around the tree. Does this harm the tree?
Well, circling roots are always a cause for concern because those circling roots could eventually begin to girdle the trunk of the tree. It's hard to say why they're doing that. And I'm not a big fan of building beds around trees anyway, so that might have been the first mistake. But if it's an ash, it could be a moot point, depending on when the emerald ash borer shows up and what part of the state this is. So, yes, it is a cause for concern. If the roots can be identified, then perhaps you cut them away from the trunk before they begin to cause damage. But yeah, I'd be a little worried about that.
Okay, let's go to caller Cheryl in Idell. Cheryl, what's your question?
Hi. Just about 3 weeks ago, a well-meaning young man helping me with a lot of yard work on my acreage cut back all of my hydrangeas to the ground. He did not realize they were intentional plants. And the hydrangeas were originally planted about 6 years ago. They were well established. I'm seeing, little shoots, new shoots mm-hmm. on the ground, but I'm wondering, can they be saved or, anything I should do to help ensure their survival?
I think they'll come back. What I would do would be to, if we have a dry summer, go out there periodically, maybe every week or 10 days, and water them thoroughly and do that through the summer. And if you do that, I think that should encourage them. But beyond that, basically nothing. They should come back. They've been hurt quite severely, but they should come back.
Okay, very good. That's good to hear. thank you very much.
Thank you, Cheryl. And one more quick call, Jim in Cedar Falls. Jim, what's your question? Quick.
Was it possibly Jill, not Jim?
Oh, sorry, Jill. I'm so sorry. Jill, what's your question?
We have a planting at the rear of our lot that includes Scotch pines about 15 foot on center. Last year, two of them died. Would like to replant. It's wet, poorly drained soil. What's a good evergreen to put there?
That's going to be an extremely short list, Jill. Wet and poorly drained. Perhaps hemlock. Is it shady at all? Does it tend to be a little shady back there?
Oop. Oh, Jill, is it shady?
Fairly shady, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you could try hemlock, and you also could try arborvitae, but I'm concerned that poorly drained and wet isn't going to do those conifers many, many favors. But of the two that I can think of, perhaps arborvitae and perhaps hemlock, and you might plant them high or find the highest ground to plant them on.
That's all the time we have for today. Jeff Iles, thanks for being here.
You bet. Thank you, Sarah.
Jeff Iles is the horticulture chair at Iowa State University. And Richard Duran, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Richard is a horticulturalist at ISU Extension. Talk of Iowa is produced by Ben Stanton, Emily Woodbury, and Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had technical assistance today from Jason Burns. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Sarah Bowden. Charity Nebbie will be back next week. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.